All right, today we have part three. So today we're going to continue our series on spiritual mastery today. This will be part three of that. What is spiritual mastery? Just for a quick review to give some context, some people have not heard the first two. Some people may be hearing this for the first time on the web. But we go to Hebrews 6, verse 1 through 3. I'll just quote it for us. It says, leaving the discussion of the elementary principles of Christ, let us go on to perfection, not laying again the foundation of repentance from dead works, etc. The idea of perfection, when we think of that, it's kind of the wrong word when it's translated into English, because it doesn't mean, hey, I've got to be perfect, because we know we're going to be in the flesh and we're going to sin. Paul said that at the end of his life. He said, oh, what a wretched man I am. I'm trying to do this and my body wants to do that. And he realized the status of the flesh. But perfection really means maturity. And the idea is that we go on to maturity and that in a Christian walk, we should become more mature over time. That means that we get better at it. We work at it. It does not mean that we never make a mistake. That's not what it means. So becoming mature is what the idea is, or becoming a master of it. When you see somebody who has worked hard their whole lives and worked at something, when you see them at the end, it looks kind of like, wow, that seems natural, it seems easy. They've become a master of what they're doing, a master of their craft, whether it's guitar or anything else like that. And you see that and go, wow, I really appreciate that. That's the idea here, is that we, as we walk through our lives, will come through our lives and become better at it. We'll become more mature at what we do. In fact, it doesn't mean you're perfect. And, you know, you recognize that. The more mature you become, you recognize, wow, I still have a long ways to go. I still have a long ways to go. So we see this in the Bible. Turn over to Matthew 23, 25, and 26. And we find that Christ tells us how to do this. In the Bible, the concept is that there is a outer man, or how we portray or what we do. You know, that has to do with everything, with coming to church or talking the right talk, saying the right things. But there is work to be done that is on the inside. So if you look at a set of people who did a lot of focus on the outside, it would be the Pharisees, the religious leaders of the day. And they spent all of their time trying to look like a Christian and smell like one. But the one thing that they didn't do is do the work that was required on the inside. And so Christ gave a formula to them and to us of how you actually fix that. They were not mature. Everybody thought they were the pinnacle of religion and religious people, but they were the most immature, actually, because they didn't do the work on the inside. And Matthew 23, 25 says this. It says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites. It says, first clean the for you clean the outside of the cup of the dish. You make it look good on the outside, but inside you're full of extortion and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and the dish, that the outside then may be clean also. So the pattern set by Christ, how do we mature? What do? Is that we have to work on the inside, the inner man, the inside, what's in our heart, our minds, and our thoughts. Super easy to be like a Pharisee and to show up and say, hey, I'm here. I look like this. I smell like this. But you could be full of dead men's bones on the inside. And Christ says, that's not maturity. It's immaturity. So the pattern is to focus on the inside, work on the inside, and then the outside will line up with that as well. And so this is the idea of spiritual mastery, is that we need to focus on lining up not only just the outside of how we present ourselves, but we must focus on the inside so that those two things start to become one. They're not disjointed. They're not saying one thing, thinking another. They're all one cohesive thought, all put together. That's what maturity is lining those things up. It says in 1 Samuel 16:7 that God looks at the heart. That's what it means. God's looking on the inside, not just what you say on the outside. God is looking on the inside to see where you're at. It doesn't say he's looking for good intentions. Oh, he had a good heart, even though he punched me in the face. He had a good heart. That's not what he's saying. He's saying he's looking for you to not punch somebody in the face and not get mad at them on the inside. So that's what he's saying. I'm looking at the inside of a person. That's how God views us. And so we have to look at our inside, the inward man. And you see examples in the Bible where this was and wasn't, or things were lined up when they weren't. And I won't go over the example again, but the prodigal son was one. The prodigal son went away. The other one came back, who was at home. he got mad because the other one who went and did all this wrong, when he was doing all the right, he got mad. Why? Because he still had work on the inside to do. Yes, it's hard if that guy spent all of the money on everything, and he was always doing good, but he still needed to say, like the father said, look, it's good that he's repented. It's good that he's saved. And you need to know that too. And so he had work to do on the inside. And you see this throughout the Bible, Cain and Abel, and the discrepancy of bringing an offering but being angry on the inside. Those things need to line up. So when we talk about spiritual mastery, that's what it means. Let's work on the inside. Let's become more mature on that. Let's make sure we're not just focusing on the outside. It's important to frame it like that because a lot of times we will give sermons or only talk about the outside. Hey, we come through the days of unleavened bread. And if you go through the days of unleavened bread and you only give sermons about putting out leavening out of your house and how you find every crumb and you search all your labels and you do all this, that's only the outward. Should we do that? For sure. But the inward is what the meaning of that is, and you should focus on that. First, clean the inside, and that outside will as well. So think of it like that, that this is why we need to frame it like that, and we need to focus on the inside. That's what spiritual mastery is all about. We are to go on from the basics of showing up and keeping to becoming better at it, to leveling up in our Christianity, to becoming better and more mature in how we do things. So that is the idea here. Now, let's go through part three. Today, I want to talk through the tongue and mastering our tongue. This is an important one, and I want to frame this in the right way because there is a goal to move towards when we talk about the tongue and what that looks like, and that's what we need to focus on. All right, let's start through the tongue. The idea of through the tongue and how you read this chart is you start at the bottom, and that is the most basic level, level one, I call it. And the idea is that as you move up to level two, three, and four, each of these represents a stage and a way to grow. That is that there are things to do to move from one level to the other. And again, like I said, this is not an exact science. I'm attempting to put some sort of a frame around generally what it's like to move from one level to the next. But again, you could have pieces of these. You may divide it up differently yourself, but just really it's meant to be like, hey, let's talk about how we can progress and what are some things in those buckets that you can do to get to the next bucket, basically. Think of it like that. When you get all the way up to level four, that's always Christ. This is the example that we're set. He is the living way. He's the word. Everything that's written there, he lived there. He didn't have some discrepancy in how he lived and what he said. And so that's an important context to understand, especially in this one, is he was through and through how he thought and what he said were exactly the same things. So let's start at the bottom, level one. The idea of level one, I call him the outburster. The outburster is the name. And the idea of this is that this person is generally has angry outbursts. Think of this as at the extreme bottom level, always lashing out at people, words that cut, always cutting, reacts to everything around, always on the defensive, and the words that are spoken are meant to divide, and that whatever group that they're in always is kind of stirred up. Well, that's what's happening on the outside with what's spoken. What's happening on the inside is that the thoughts are all around thoughts of human nature. They're self-centered and they're arrogant. And the idea here, and I'll come back to this, is Satan actually plants thoughts in this person's head that will be used against others. And then this person focuses on digging up evil. It's a focus on what they dwell on and what they are thinking in their minds. So let's go through a few of these. Number one, let me quote Galatians 5:19, which is on there. It's talking about the works of the flesh. What are of the flesh or what of human nature? It says they're self-evident. One of the things listed besides sorcery, hatred, etc. is outbursts of wrath. What we find defined for us is that it's just human nature to have outbursts of wrath. So this type of a thing is just letting your impulses, this is a natural way to be. This is not curbing yourself at all, but that's part of what human nature is. And the works of the flesh is, one of them listed is outbursts of wrath. So that anger, that outbursts, those types of things and lashing out are all part of human nature. Proverbs 12, verse 18. I'll kind of take these. You'll see the scriptures on the right side. I'll take them a little bit out of order sometimes. But Proverbs 12, 18. says, there is one who speaks like the piercings of a sword. There's one who speaks like the piercings of the sword, and that would describe this person. That is, the language, the words that they say are cutting. I don't know if you've ever experienced or run into somebody like this, or been somebody like this, is where always having some sharp retort or something that kind of undercuts, or it may, with a smile on the face, be a backhanded thing, and the other person goes, ouch, that, I don't know, it felt a little bit like that hurt somehow. I don't know if you've ever met somebody, but that is what this type of a thing is. There's someone who speaks like the piercings of a sword, like getting stabbed at all times. It could be overt or not, or blatant. It could be all of those things, but it's someone whose tongue is, it hurts. It penetrates like that. Proverbs 16, verse 27 is an interesting scripture. So on the side of carnal human nature, an ungodly man digs up evil, and it's on his lips like a burning fire. So that is the part where what's going on in a person's head is that they're always thinking, maneuvering, looking, finding fault, looking to find what's bad about somebody, looking to find the negative, dig up the evil, say it, find out, oh man, that really gets to that person. How about I just kind of slip it in? And it's on their lips. They want to say it. So when you think about this person is very much on the human nature reacting side, very much on not controlling anything. But can you start to see that what's going on is not just, hey, I'm saying words, but there's things that are going on inside of the person. The thoughts are around things that are like digging up evil. The thoughts are on things that are not good for other people. Now turn over to James 3. James 3 and verse 6. James 3 and verse 6. This scripture, we'll use throughout this one because it's a very important one. Let me call out one part of this. This is talking about the tongue and the different elements of it. James 3, verse 6, it says, and the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body, and it sets on fire the course of nature and is set on fire by hell. This is describing how words are, that the tongue is like a fire, contains a lot of things. It's set among the members that it defiles the body. It defiles the body of people here, but it defiles your own body is really what that's saying. It's saying that when you speak negative words, when you speak badly, when you talk like this, when you rage, that is harming yourself. That is harming your own body. It's doing you. It's like pointing a gun right, you know, at yourself, basically, and pulling a trigger is what that's saying. So words, it defiles your whole body, and it sets on course on fire the course of nature, speaks to, it actually can set the direction of your life, and I'll come back to that when we progress up. The last one is the one I want to focus on. It says, it's set on fire by hell. The idea here that it's set on fire by hell is that the words have a root. They come from, when they're destructive and negative, they come from Satan himself. Satan is the one who is for speaking this way. He is the one who talks like this. They come from him. That is the source of that type of stuff. Now, let's copy that with, or add to that, 2 Timothy 2:26. Let me just quote this to you. 2 Timothy 2:26, it says, they may come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil, having been taken captive by him to do his will. I won't read you all the context, and you can pair that with Romans 6:22, which I won't turn to, which says, do not be a weapon. So, the words originate from Satan. People can, out of the sinful nature of just giving into their nature, be taken captive to do the will of Satan, and we can become an instrument. So if you put those three scriptures together, that's a sermon by itself, but that's saying that it's possible to be maneuvered by Satan, to become a weapon for him. If he's planting these words and they're lodging and they're coming out at other people, then you are becoming someone who is a tool in his hands, a weapon, not for good, but for cutting, like a sword that cuts. And it's important to understand this because at some point in your life, this person who operates at this level has to understand that's where they're at. That you are actually doing the will of Satan. You are doing his bidding. You are a weapon for destruction. You may think and this is where he works, is that you're so right because you've been so wronged, or it's been so hard for you, or this person did this to you. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter, but if you get those thoughts in your head that are like that, that's what Satan wants. That's how he captures you. That's how he captures somebody to do his will, is to get you to think that you've been wronged. You could have been wronged. It may be true. But he wants you to fester on that. He wants you to become angry. And then he's going to plant thoughts about things, and your words are going to reflect that. Do you see here that you can't move past this level? It's not just a matter of, hey, I stopped saying bad things. You actually have to realize underneath your human nature, and you're self-centered, you're arrogant, and that those thoughts that Satan is putting in there is to make you a tool in his hands to use you to do what his will is. You have to realize that's at the very bottom. It's not just a, hey, I'm saying some bad stuff, but that you're actually being manipulated, probed, and pushed by a being that wants to destroy other people, and you're part of that. It's very important to get that at the bottom level when you're dipping into those base human emotions. That's what's going on. If you put it in that context, it should make you as a Christian stop and think, like, okay, I am really mad. I'm really feeling this, but if I act out on this, am I actually going to tear someone down and do the bidding of what Satan would want to see? Or is this going to produce something that's good or not? That's the question that we have to ask. And so turn to James 3:14 along this line. James 3:14. With that thought in mind, read this. But James 3:14 says, if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, all carnal human nature, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not come from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. That's the way Satan works. He wants to put those thoughts in your head. And when it's about your nature and self-seeking and you're arrogant, you think you're right, and all the hurts that you've been given, you need to lash out. That's what you're going to produce. Confusion and every evil thing is going to come out of that. But the wisdom that's from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So put all those scriptures together and you realize that when you're at this base level, just reacting and operating on your human nature, you're in the hands of Satan, and he can plot things in your head that make you go, yeah, and you'll say them and you'll destroy somebody, and you're a tool or an instrument that is a piercing of a sword to somebody else, that is a destructive force. You have to realize that it's not just that feeling that you have, but you're becoming a force to wreck other people with your tongue. That's important. So that is work. If you realize that, that's all inside that you have to recognize is there. That's all inside of a person. Now, let's turn over to Numbers. Let's see, Numbers 13. Numbers 13, and it doesn't just go the way of, hey, I've just said something negative and dogged you. It is how your words affect a group. What are you thinking about? Are you thinking about yourself and scared and preserving and all these other things? Or are you focused on God and looking forward? Numbers 13 shows us a story. It says, this is the story of the spies. And they all came back in verse 27. It says, they told him, we went to the land where you sent us, and it truly is great, right? Flows of milk and honey, and there is this fruit. It's fruit. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell, etc., etc. And then Caleb quieted the people, and he said, no. In verse 30, let's go up and take possession, for we're able to overcome it. And then in verse 31, the men who had gone up said, no, we're not able to, for they're stronger than us. Neg, blah, 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 blah. Can you see here, too, what's happening? If you don't pause your words, if you, out of your own human nature and fear and what you see and all those things, don't quiet yourself. Think about Caleb. He quieted the people. Before you speak out of fear to a group, before you say your opinion, quiet yourself. And think about, if I look out at you, what I say next, is it going to go like this and divide the people off and cause a frenzy? That's not the right words to speak. The right words to speak are those which are focused on God and give strength and bring people together and say, yes, it may look that way, but we can do this and God is on our side, or whatever it is to bring people together. And you can see here, the spies with a bad report, what were they? They were tools in Satan's hand again. So it's not just I'm dogging you. It is if you don't quiet yourself in your human nature, in the fear, in those things you see, and pause before you speak to a group, then you could do the same thing. And guess what? That wrecked them. It went through this group like fire, and everybody started wailing, and it just broke them. And you can see what words do. Well, guess what? That is sparked from when it says Satan. He's that comes from as a source of those things. So think of this level too as not just reacting to your human nature, just what you feel, but quiet yourself. And think about the, what am I going to do to this group right here? Am I going to strengthen them or am I going to split them? And that is what we need to think about too. So that's all part of this. When you look at this type of person, if we go back and read this again, on the outside they have angry outbursts. They're lashing out at people. The words that cut. They react to everything. They're always on the defensive. And they stir up and divide groups that they're part of. On the inside, they're only running the path of human nature. They're self-centered and arrogant. They think they're right. Satan plants thoughts in this person's head that they'll be used against others, and they dig up evil about others in their minds. So that's the extreme bottom, level one. You can see that. Realize to get out of this, you need to know that you're a tool in the hand of Satan and that, nope, I'm not going to be doing that anymore. All right, let's move to the second level. Level two. I call this the tongue biter. Tongue biter. So if we progress up, this person on the outside, you know, they become aware that speaking badly affects relationships. They can see it. You know what? These words I keep saying, my relationships aren't working out great. Sometimes has reactions as an outburst, but for the most part, they're biting their lip, tongue, and trying not to say it. They speak truth externally most of the time. So you characterize this as kind of a mixture. You're progressing, you're seeing it, but there's a bit of a mixture. And on the inside, this person begins to understand that words come out of the heart, their own heart. This is where they originate from. And not only do words that are evil spoken outward, but they corrupt themselves with them. They still have hurts that are nursed inside, and this is a big one here. Hurts. Bitterness might be present in this case on the inside. But at some point, they begin to reject a lot of negative self-talk, and they begin to discern selfish thoughts and start to care about others in their thinking so that their words start to come out better. You want to think of it like that. So let's look at this, the tongue biter. Turn over to Psalms 39, verse 1. Psalms 39, verse 1. Psalms 39, verse 1 says, in verse 2, it says, I will guard my ways, lest I sin with my tongue. I will restrain my mouth with a muzzle while the wicked are before me. I was mute with silence. I held my peace even from good, and my sorrow was stirred up. It's good to muzzle our mouths. It's not bad. So I don't mean to paint that negative here. I'm just saying it's good to muzzle. But you can see it's kind of biting the tongue. I am there, but inside I'm stirred up and I'm burning with anger. In Proverbs 21, 23, I'll just quote it, says, whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from troubles. So biting your tongue and not saying something bad is good. Let me say that. That's what this says. If you guard your mouth and tongue, let me just guard it. Let me not say it. You keep your soul from troubles. That's a good start. That's a good thing. And that's what we read all over and over and over in different scriptures is, yes, don't just say it. Don't just say it. But you have to go past that too in this level. Because biting the tongue is good. Please just, you know, at some point in your life, you have to go, look, I'm just going to stop saying all these bad things I've been saying, all these negative things. I'll bite my tongue. And that's great. But you also then have to realize, where is that coming from? Why am I always saying stuff like that? Matthew 15, 17. Matthew 15, 17. It says, do you not yet understand that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and is eliminated? But those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and they defile a man. In Luke 6:45, I'll quote it, for out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Right? We've heard that one. Great phrase to remember. It's saying, if you're having to constantly bite your tongue, and you keep wanting to say these things, good on you for not saying them, number one. That's great. But if you keep having to bite your tongue, there's something coming from your heart that you need to look at. For out of the abundance of the heart, it's going to come out. Something's in there. What is that something? It could be anything. It could be anger. It could be hurt. It could be jealousy. It could be any of the things. But whatever's in there needs to be looked at. You have heart work to do if you're biting your tongue. You have work to do inside your heart if you're biting your tongue, because that's where it's coming from. There's something stuck. Have you been hurt, abused? Have things been difficult? Have they been unfair? Have it been whatever? It could be. All legit. But if you find yourself voicing that and coming out at other people, and it's still there, there's heart work to do if you're biting your tongue. So healing of emotions, of things that might be making you bitter. You want to change your language. Work on your hurts. Work on the things that have hurt you. Work on the things that upset you. Work on the things that seem unequal. Find an answer in the Bible, in God, to let those things go on the inside, and your mouth will follow that. You'll stop saying too many things. You'll stop being biting or undercutting when you find peace inside with those things that are difficult to deal with. That's how it works. It's coming from the heart, and that's what he says. You know, a lot of times we phrase this one in, you know, I just tell how it is, and I'm an honest talker, and, you know, you just have to take me as I am. Love me, all of me, because this is who I am. And then you're walking around punching people in the face all the time. You know, there is something about being honest, for sure. I love that. I love people who are just straight up, and you know what they are. I love that. But that is an excuse when it starts to cut other people down for hurts, and then you use that as an excuse to hurt other people. So think about this. If you're just biting your tongue, you have things in your heart that you haven't resolved that need to be sorted, and at peace in your heart will result in a calm set of words coming out of your mouth to other people and situations that are difficult for you and are unfair and all of the rest of it. Now, an important thing to understand here is the one part of the scripture in James where it says it's so set up among the members that it defiles the whole body. It's important to understand that it's not talking just about the body like, hey, the body that you're in the church, but it means that body in the sense of your body. When you get to this level, you'll start to understand that the words you're saying negative to other people are actually corrupting you. They're bringing you down. You are the one who is tarnished. You are the one who is chipped away at. Not the other person. I mean, they may be. But it defiles you, your body. You have to understand that. You can't hold poison inside of you and go, hey, it didn't affect me. You know, bitterness is something that we keep on the inside of us, expecting another person to die from it, basically. You know, think about that. It's you're the one who's getting hurt by these things. So when you keep this stuff inside, you may not say it. You may bite your tongue and present yourself. But you have to understand, man, I am really bringing myself down, too, with this. That's an important part of understanding and getting past this level. Right? Heal the hurts. But also, if I hold on to those things, it's like holding poison in your mouth, sticking it in your cheek, going like, hey, I'm just going to keep a little bit right here. And guess what? It's inside your body. It's going to affect you some way. Right? And we find this throughout the Bible in different things. Acts 8, verse 18. Let me just read one of these. Acts 8, verse 18. This is talking about Simon Peter. Acts 8:18 says, when Simon saw that through the laying on of the hands the Holy Spirit was given, he offered the money, and he said, you know, give me this power. Peter said to him in verse 20, your money perish with you because you thought the gift of God could be purchased with money. You have neither part nor portion in this matter, for your heart is not right in the sight of God. He identifies. Repent, therefore, of this your wickedness, and pray that God, perhaps the thoughts of your hearts may be forgiven you, for I see that you're poisoned by bitterness and bound by iniquity. You will have chains and handcuffs on you. unless you get rid of the poison of bitterness and iniquity that's inside your heart, you won't get past this level, the hurts and those things. Nursing them, they can be real, and keeping them and feeling them and the bitterness of those type of things will poison you. That's what he was saying to you. He says, look, he immediately, if somebody asked you, hey, can I have this gift? I'll pay you money. He went right to the heart of the matter. You know what? You're poisoned by bitterness in this, and you're looking at this wrong, right? And he explained that to him. And that's an important one to understand. You're poisoned by these thoughts. You're poisoned by the bitterness. You're poisoned by these things. Has somebody done it to you? Probably. But we won't get past this level in our words unless we can find a way to resolve those things. For real. I didn't say ignore them and just pretend and fakey-bakey, but heart work. What's bothering you? What's unequal? What's unfair? What hurt do you have? And finding a way to come to peace with it through God's words will help your words come out better. That's the difference between just, I didn't speak it, which is good, don't say it. But if you're biting your tongue, white-knuckling it, then the heart needs more work, the inside to get past the level. So let's read that one again, move to the next one. So the tongue biter becomes aware that speaking badly affects the relationships. They sometimes have reactions and outbursts, but for the most part, bites his or her tongue or lip. Doesn't say it, which is good. Speaks the truth externally most of the time and starting to grow, but inside begins to understand. Words come out of the heart and it corrupts themselves. They still have hurts that are nursed inside. Bitterness might be present. Begins to reject all this negative talk that's going around the head. Begins to discern selfish thought and starts to care about others in all of this. So you can kind of see those two things, right? It's a good step, good progression. There's work to be done to get past there. And again, like I said, these are just general, not exact science, generally kind of things and buckets to think about. But I've been stuck there many times, and it's an important place to get unstuck from. Let's go to the next one, because this is a next level that we want to get to. This is what I would call the healer. The healer. This person on the outside is speaking words with grace in everything. You know, somebody gracious, you know what that means? You know, have you ever met somebody and just everything they say is just, yeah, it's so kind, full of compassion and warmth and for you and encouraging to you. The truth may be there, but they're so encouraging. You know they're on your side and you just feel better off. That's what grace means when you speak with grace. So everything that's said is done this way. Words start to promote health in themselves. Whereas before you were poisoning yourself, now you're promoting health in yourself and with others. They choose to speak words to comfort and calm, not stir up. You're in a group. I don't want to get in my way. Even if it's out of fear or this, or I disagree with some people, you're trying to calm things, not stir them up. Sometimes flattery might be here, though. I'll come back to that because that's a nuance of something that's to be refined. And they refuse to say anything bad about anyone. They've stopped their tongue. They said, I won't say anything. On the inside, they think about having to give account for every word one day. They speak the truth in their heart. They start to speak truth inside. They think about words and that they'll set the course of their own life. They realize the power of that. But there's still some duplicitous thoughts at times. As in, I'm still thinking this, but I didn't say it. But they pray for wisdom and a pure heart, and they constantly put the words of life in their head. Can you see how we're up a notch here? Let's go a bit further with this. So what are some of the points here? Point one is, what is the goal here? Proverbs 16:24. The goal with our words, if you want to think about something to strive for, is to be a healer with the tongue. Proverbs 16:24. Pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones. Right words are and promote health. To who? To who? Obviously, outward, right? But you know what? It's the converse of the other statement, where you have bitterness destroys yourself. Good words promote health to who? To you. To. Do you know that when you speak good words to other people and encourage, that it comes back to you, that strengthens and makes you healthier? Healthier how? It means every sense of the word, mentally, emotionally, could even physically. Have you ever been encouraged by somebody? There's a health that's there. There's a health that you get out of it, a strengthening, a, you know, I can do this. I feel stronger. Those are things that are spiritual in nature. So if we look at what do we do is to get to a next step is not just, hey, we just stop saying bad things, but we want to become a healer with our words. If you think about healing, what's needed? Yeah, people need physical healing, but I guarantee you, more emotional, mental healing is needed in this world than spiritual. And those could be related sometimes, not all at times, but there's a connection. And guess what's needed? You know what Christ said when he came to heal is he spoke words to heal too. It wasn't just, oh, you're a sick person, you're better. Sick person, you're better. Sick person, you're better. He's interested in the entire being of the person. Physical, yes, but they're mental and emotional. And he healed. When he talks about healing, it's a spiritual thing too. It's all of those senses of the word. So the goal for us is to become that with our words, speaking them so others feel strengthened and you also are healed at the same time too. Proverbs, I'll quote a few more. Proverbs 15:23. A man has joy by the answer of his mouth and a word spoken in due season. How good it is. Proverbs 12:25. Anxiety in the heart of a man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad. Anxiety, depression, anxiousness. Somebody saying something good and strengthening to you makes it glad. Some of that drops away. Can you see the healing that it's talking about? These are all real things with words. Proverbs 15:4. A wholesome tongue is a tree of life. A tree of life. That's great. When you read through the Bible, you can see what we need to get to. It's not just I bit my tongue and didn't say something, but I'm still thinking it. It is thinking about becoming a healer. Have you ever thought about that with your words? I really want to become a healer. I want to get rid of all of the junk, all of the hurts and things that are behind so that I can really be someone who is connected out. That not only what I say strengthens them, but man, I am healed too. This whole thing is a, you know, that's what it feels like all around. Colossians 4:6, I'll quote it. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. How should we answer each one? Let me reverse that sentence. How should you answer people? I just gave you the answer. It's in Galatians or Colossians 4:6. Your speech is always with grace and seasoned with salt. How do you answer people? Always with grace and seasoned with salt. Things that preserve, things that are good, things that add flavor and color. That's how we should answer people. That is the goal that we want to get to. Part of this, in this level, let me read you Matthew 12:36. Matthew 12:36. It says, "But I say to you that for every idle word men speak, they will give account of in the day of judgment." I always read that and I go, oh boy. I don't know about you, but I'm like, oh boy. But it's an important one to put into your thinking. It says you're going to have to account for your words. So when you get to a more mature place, you put this in your thinking. Yeah, I need to account for my words someday. Let me keep that in mind before I say that. Okay, great. That one stops us in our tracks, but it's an important one to understand too. Psalms 15. Psalms 15. This is great. Do you know why? Psalm 15. Psalm 15 tells who's going to be in the kingdom. What type of people will be in the kingdom? So when you want to think about your words and how you react to people, you need to understand that this is important for you when you look forward to going into the kingdom. This is the type of people that will be there. So Psalms 15:1 says, "Who may abide in your tabernacle and who may dwell on your holy hill? He who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. He who does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against his friend, words of a reproach, in whose eyes a vile person is despised, but he honors those who fear the Lord. He who swears to his own hurt and does not change." So all these things have to do with how you're speaking. Can you see there that type of person to get to that God's looking for us to mature in is to be like that, that you're in your heart speaking truth. You're not backbiting. You're not reproaching other people. This is what he wants to see. That is when we get to this healer level, this is the type of person. You have to do all those things on the inside and the outside. Now, one big part to understand here is that phrase part of James 3:6. I won't turn back there, but talking about the tongue, it says it sets on fire the course of nature. Actually, sorry, let's turn back to James 3 because we'll read 2 through 4 this time. James 3, 2 through 4. This becomes one that's important to understand as you mature. The power of words have on you a bearing of your life. The power of words. James 3, verse 2 through 4 says, "For we all stumble in many things, and if anyone does not stumble in word, he's a perfect man, also able to bridle the whole body." A mature man. Hey, guess what? Topic of the day. "Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths, and they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships, though they're so large and driven by fierce winds. They are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires." What is this talking about? You're turning something. You're turning something, no? I'm turning the head of a horse, or I'm turning a ship a certain direction. In the phrase that was down in 6, it sets on fire the course of nature. It sets on fire the course of your life. James is trying to communicate something here to us about words. That's super important to understand. That it changes and sets the course of your life. That words have the power to change the direction of your life, to set the course. It's a tiny little rudder. It's a tiny little bit in a horse's mouth, but it changes the entire direction of that thing. That's the intent of this. The words that you keep in your head, that you speak out of your mouth, can change and set the direction of your life. When you get to this point, not only do you just realize I'm biting my tongue and healing hurts inside, you realize that the language you repeat in your head, the words you say to other people, can actually change the direction of your entire life. That's what James is saying. It's a tiny little rudder, but guess what? It changed the whole ship. You ever see those oil tankers? Those massively big oil tankers? I think they take 10 miles to stop or something. There's just some massive distance, but something like that has tiny little rudders. If you look compared to the size of the ship, that will turn that thing and can make that go a different direction. A massive movement and a massive body can be changed by something small. That's what it's saying. And we may think of words as small. We may think of them as not important, but they are so vitally important. You want to change the direction of your life, work on the words. What words? Words external. Work on the words in your head too. What are you telling yourself all day? Are you telling yourself what God has said to you, or are you telling yourself what somebody else has said to you? Tell yourself these things that God says to you. Put those in your head. You'll change your life. This is not some pop psychology and some rah-rah, self-help talk. This is super real. That's what James is saying. Put the words of life in your head. Put God's words in there. Listen to them. Repeat them in your brain. Repeat them to others. You'll change your life. That's what it's saying. You'll change your life. That's what that means. Super important. So we find that whole progression in James is very important. So let me read you the NIV version of James 3:6. It says, "The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and itself is set on fire by hell." So you can see the relation. Can you start to see how powerful and important it is to talk about the tongue? And then I'll quote you Proverbs 18:22. "Death and life are in the power of the tongue." Who's death? Who's life? Yours. These scriptures are not just written there as nice sayings. This very much needs to be considered, how powerful the tongue is. And then one last one, let's read in this section, and we'll finish up in the last one. James 3, verse 9. James 3, verse 9. It says, talking about the tongue, "With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessings and cursings. My brethren, these things ought not to be. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, and grapevine bear figs? The snow spring yields both salt water and fresh. There is work to be done, in this case, around single-mindedness of how you view people. In this level, there still might be duplicitous thoughts. Have you ever thought something bad about people negatively, and you didn't say it, and you were positive to them? Guess what? You still have work to do. That's what this is saying. This is saying, like, you know, you can't say, hey, God, I'm blessing you, but then you're cursing and other people as well. There's still work to be done. You can't have those two things. There's a pureness that has to be lined up inside and out. You have to also stop thinking badly, even thoughts badly about people. There's other ways to think about people. Hey, I don't know what they're going through. God can help that person. They seem to be struggling. You know what? They're yelling at me, but maybe I should reach out. I don't know. Let me do my part. Let me pray to God about them. Let me do my part and not react to this. And you start to think about other people, and you start to think about that way, and there's not duplicitous, where I'm saying something to your face, but inside I'm thinking something else. So flattery, this is why I bring flattery up. Flattery is a part of this. There's proverbs that say flattery wrecks or brings ruin, and it's true. Because it's an artificial, you can give people compliments and encouragement, but flattery is not that. Is that flattery is for your intent. Flattery gets you something. Hey, man, yours is awesome. You know, you're doing so good. I can't believe, oh, wow, you're so amazingly talented. You're blah, 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 blah. And people are like, oh, wow, that's really nice. Flattery is to get your intent. Can you see how saying something externally, it sounds really good, but the inside is not lined up? That's what flattery is called. So if you want to take anything you say compared to that, hey, I'm saying something really positive outside, but where's my brain inside with this right now? Am I going to get something out of this? Or am I truly, from my heart, saying that person needs an encouragement and that's all I'm doing? That's where flattery can, you can see there's nuances of things with all of these words. Think about the outside. Is it positive? Yeah, great, check. Where is your brain and where's your human nature with this? Just ask yourself. Because it won't be evident. You can only answer that. Ask yourself what your human nature is behind that. Are you getting something out of it, or are you actually doing it out of a pureness of heart? All right, and let's finish up with Christ, because that brings up this level, Christ. Because everything Christ did was lined up inside and out. When you get to this point, he's not inside thinking all these things and outside, you know, doing something else. It was completely lined up. So Christ, level 4, didn't react even to venomous words. He did good to enemies. He speaks in love. He prays to God to deal with those political. He's full of grace and truth with a spoken word. And the one I want to come back to is he rebukes the works of the devil externally. He says these things. And I want to come back to that, because how do you line up Christ getting mad at something? Right? The inner man. He forgives from the heart completely, Christ did, even when they're pounding his arms with nails to stake. He has no guile. Guile means that there is not any evil intent inside at all. He doesn't mix bad thoughts with good words. He's not doing that. There is no guile inside of him. He's pure in how he's viewing the people. And he thinks about the will of God and how to accomplish it with every word he's saying. It's the focus. And he sees everyone as the potential son and child of God, even the ones that are killing you. Think about that. That's how far he is with the inward work, with what he is inside and how it comes out in his words. And he 100% says and focuses on the words of life he put in his head, in his brain. That's where he's at. Let's just read a couple of these. I won't read 1 Peter 2:21. He committed no sin, nor was guile found in his mouth. That's a study by itself, the word guile. There was no duplicitousness. There was no ill intent inside, but he's saying things on the outside. There was none of that with him. There was a purity from inside to outside, and it was completely pure. There's no difference with those things of how he was. He truly was who he said and how he acted. Right? And there's times he didn't react. Matthew 27, verse 11. Right? He was standing and being accused. And it says when he was being accused, he didn't say anything. And they said, man, don't you hear what they're saying about you? And he didn't answer one word. And the governor marveled. You don't have to react. He did not react. He said, don't have to come out with a rebuttal to all this. And it wasn't like he's just sitting there like, oh, I'm going to punch you all. He's like, nope, don't need to say it. Don't need to. And I know what's going on here. In Matthew 5:37 is an important principle. Matthew 5. To become aligned inside and out. Read this. When it says the first yes, that's what you say externally. The second yes is your internal man. So Matthew 5:37 says, but let your external yes actually really be an internal yes. See how that's saying that? He's saying the same thing. And let your external no actually be an internal no. Because he says, what's more than this is what? There's two scriptures. One says it's hypocrisy. Means, I'm saying one thing, but I'm really thinking something else. Right? Inside. Guess where else that is all about? This scripture says that's from the evil one. That's from the devil. The words, when you're hypocrite, when you're saying something externally and something internally, that's of the devil. That's how he speaks. He will come up to you and make you feel like $1 million, but inside he wants to destroy you. Christ will come up and make you feel like $1 million and the truth and wants to save completely with no guile, no ill intent. They may sound the same on the outside, and this is where people get confused, but the inside has to line up. So let your external yes. If you're going to say yes, it better mean yes through and through. If you're going to say no, it should be no on the inside. Can you see how that's saying this exact same thing? Your external and your internal must line up. Don't mix the two. It's of the devil. That's how he works. You are then, full circle, putting yourself back into as a tool of Satan. This is where I say things like flattery are not good. Because your external says one thing, it looks great, and your internal is some other motivation. Or manipulating people. Hey, this, but you really want this. That stuff is confusing. Confusion. Don't do that kind of stuff. If you want somebody to do something, just ask them, hey, I could use some help. I know you're busy. Could you do this? I'd love for you to. Nothing else. And they can go, thanks for asking. I appreciate it. I'm really busy and I can't this time, but can I do it next time? Yeah, great. Like, very clear. We're not, hey, you know you're the best. Let's go do that. Oh, and all of a sudden they drop the shoe. Hey, could you do this for me? And you're like, oh, I just felt like I got manipulated here somehow. That's mixing the external and internal. Line them up. If you're going to say yes, it should internally be yes. If you're going to say no, it should internally be no. Think of it like that. And let's read just one last one as we finish this up. I won't read Psalm 64, but he talks about there's prayer of getting those who are political with their tongue. And let God take care of those things and not him. Don't fester on them. Isaiah 55, verse 11. Isaiah 55, verse 11. Christ is the Word. Right? Correct? Isn't that an interesting name? Guess what we're talking about today? Your words, the tongue. Christ is the tongue, is the words. This is his defining characteristic. When Christ speaks in the words of God, what do they do? Compare this to what your words do. Christ, Isaiah 55, verse 11 through 13 says, shall my word be that goes from my mouth. So shall my word be that goes from my mouth. It won't return to me void or empty for nothing. It will accomplish what I please, and it shall prosper in the thing for which I sent it. For you shall go out with joy and be led out with peace. The mountains and the hills shall break forth into singing before you, and all the trees in the field shall clap their hands. Instead of the thorn shall come up the cypress. Instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle. And it shall be to the Lord for a name, for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off. The words of God produce this in everybody's life and in the world. Instead of the briars and thorns in your life, there is the growth. Instead of it in the world, it's this. Compare your words. This is the power of the words. Christ is the Word. And the Word does this. do you and I. So when we get to level four, it's producing something that's far bigger, that changes lives, that changes the world, that changes every single thing. That's the goal that we get to. And the way we get there is we realize what we are and we work on the inside, as well as the words that are spoken, so that those things can line up, that we can produce and be just like the Word of God.